Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Big show this time around. We get a live set from singer and songwriter Angel Olsen, who has a voice you will not soon forget. And composer Phil Klein will help us look ahead to next week's 100th anniversary of Stravinsky's Rite of Spring by sharing some of the greatest recordings of that piece. But first...
Three, that's a magic number. Three. It is. It's the magic number.
Pick Three is our occasional feature in which we ask a guest to give us three songs that they're loving right now. Khaled Hosseini is the best-selling author of The Kite Runner and A Thousand Splendid Suns, and he's here to tell us about what he's been listening to lately while writing his brand new novel called And the Mountains Echoed. Khaled, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. I loved this novel, your first new one in 6 years.
Yes.
It tells the story of a young Afghan boy named Abdullah, his baby sister Pari.
Right.
They are separated when she's adopted by a woman who eventually takes her to Paris. And from there, you kind of spin out all these different kind of themes and variations on those themes.
Right.
The setting, for the most part, with detours to the States and Paris and the Greek islands, is Afghanistan.
That's still the home base.
Right. So it kind of makes sense then that the music that you've suggested for us today also comes from Afghanistan. Now, how much of this music did you listen to as a kid growing up there?
Oh, it's the soundtrack of my childhood. And it's in many ways a soundtrack of my adulthood. The songs that I picked, particularly the first two songs by the singer named Ahmad Zahir, are songs that I listened to when I was a kid growing up in Kabul. They're songs that I listened to when I was a teen in France, when I was a adolescent in the United States, when I grew up in the U.S. And they're songs that I listen to now with my brothers at parties, and we'll sit at a table with a bottle of single malt and we'll play these old songs. The lyrics, most of us know the lyrics, and we'll just listen to these songs and reminisce.
So his name is Ahmad Zahir.
Yes.
How big was this guy in Afghanistan?
Oh, I picked him because I feel like to speak about Afghan music, modern Afghan music, without mentioning Ahmad Zahir would be like to speak about rock and roll without mentioning Elvis or the Beatles. Mm-hmm. It's almost impossible to overstate the influence that he's had in Afghanistan. He was only really on the popular scene for about 10 years. But what Ahmad Zahir did in the 70s in Afghanistan is akin to what Bob Dylan did when he took up the electric guitar. Up to that point, Afghan music was essentially played with very traditional instruments, the harmonium, a tabla, which is the percussions, mm-hmm. and possibly a string instrument like the rubab or maybe a sitar. What Ahmad Zahir did was he essentially just modernized the whole music scene. He brought in drums, he brought in trumpets, gasp. Electric guitars.
Right.
And he brought this very kind of a westernized kind of influence while at the same time, singing very traditional songs, sometimes singing songs that the lyrics were Sufi poems, from Rumi. And so he was a very strange and exciting and very, very compelling kind of hybrid.
And it sounds like maybe in contrast to Elvis and Dylan, someone whose appeal went across generations.
Oh, he's probably bigger now than he was then. In fact, there are entire classes of musicians in Afghanistan who are making a very good living and have become very popular themselves for the sole reason that they sound just like Ahmad Zahir, and who is the best mimic of Ahmad Zahir. He is pound for pound as big as Elvis, I think.
Mean that literally. He was a big guy.
He became a big guy toward the end. And of course, the fact that he died young at 33 and died tragically, and that he was what many people say he was martyred, which is the word they like to use, adds a great deal to his mystique and to his mythical stance.
I want to come back to that in a moment, but let's give folks a chance to hear what we're talking about. Ahmad Zaher is the Afghani singer. Tughle Nazhama?
Tughle Nazhama, which means you are everybody's flower.
This is music picked for us by the author Khalid Hosseini. That is music from the great Afghan singer Ahmed Zaher, chosen for us by Khalid Hosseini, the author of The Kite Runner and A Thousand Splendid Sons. His new book is called And the Mountains Echoed. There is a line in your book that really struck me, and I'm not going to get it word for word, but to the effect that if culture is a house, language is the key to the front door.
Right.
Language is important in Afghanistan. This is something you've talked about in several sections of your books, is the different ethnic groups and stuff. What is the language that Ahmed Zaher is singing in?
Well, he's singing in Dari, which is the sort of the national language of Afghanistan, although there, you know, Pashto is also widely spoken in Afghanistan, particularly in the south and in the east. And there are a number of other dialects as well. But the official language was Dari. So he's singing Dari, which is sort of a very, very close to Farsi. It's essentially the same language as Farsi or Persian.
Mm-hmm. So would the people in the small towns, the people that we meet early on in this book, for example, would they have understood the texts in Dari?
Yes, they would have. Certainly, they would have understood it. And he also, by the way, sang in Pashto, and he sang in Urdu. He sang sort of the Bollywood classics and so on. So he sang in different languages, but most of his music was in Dari.
Right. Now, when you are writing, do you have music on? Can you listen and write at the same time?
I can't. I mean, it needs to be. I need to have no stimulation at all. I'm an easily distracted person, so I don't listen to music when I'm actually writing. I also shut down the windows, so I don't want to have a view either. My big bane is the internet, and I have to find some way of dealing with that. But but if I listen to Ahmad Zaher, I won't get anything done. Because you just played that song, and I might as well be 9 years old again and be living in Kabul. I mean, it's just it just transports me completely to that time and place.
Is that why he's still, all these years after his death, still so popular? Because it does transport people back to a different Afghanistan?
He is sort of the voice of those final few golden years in Afghanistan where everybody was happy, where there was peace before the country unraveled. And he died in 1979. On the mysterious circumstances. Most people believe he was murdered.
Mm-hmm. Officially a car crash.
Well, officially a car crash, but many people believe it was a staged car crash. He was murdered first, and then the car crash was staged. Nobody really knows what happens. The people who know the truth will probably take the secret with themselves to the grave. But he died in 1979, which is incidentally the year that the Soviets invaded Afghanistan and everything fell apart. So it's almost like that era died with him.
Right. Now, is that incidental, or do the theories of him being murdered have something to do with the communists?
Well, you know, his politics were known to be sort of anti-Marxist, and so he was an outspoken guy. He was 33 years old. He was a young man. He liked to drink. He was a little reckless, you know, and probably ruffled the wrong feathers.
Mm. We're speaking with Khalid Hosseini, the author of the new book And the Mountains Echoed. There is something of there's not a lot of actual music. You don't mention Ahmed Zaher in the book.
Not in this
not by
book.
Name.
No, in The Kite Runner.
In The Kite Runner. But music does kind of make a couple of appearances, especially jazz, as a kind of signifier of a character's aspirations to be not in Afghanistan, to be not Afghani, but to be Western.
Right. Look, I grew up at a time in Afghanistan where there was quite a lot of interest in the country from both the Soviet Union and also the West, including the U.S., France, England, and so on, because it was still the Cold War, remember? And so each side was trying to gain the favors of Afghanistan. It was this kind of a great push and pull. And Afghanistan benefited from that in many ways, in that, you know, schools and buildings and hydroelectric plants and so on was built in Afghanistan, one by the Soviets, and the Germans would build a school and so on. And the other thing that happened was that there was an influx of Western culture into especially Kabul, especially into a certain crust of Kabul society, which tended to be more liberal, less religious, more westernized, liked to drink, and then liked to listen to music from the West. And so I heard Tom Jones, for instance, for the first time at a party in Kabul. Is the first time I ever heard the Beatles. You know, it was the first time I ever heard jazz, which sounded just a complete mess to my ears back then. So this woman, this character, Nila, who's a poet in the Mountain Echoes, she's a big fan of jazz, and she listens to it in Kabul.
And she is the one who eventually takes the girl she's adopted and moves to the West.
She moves to France, where she's half French, and she moves back to France, where she feels much more, you know, at home in her bohemian elements.
We're speaking with Khaled Hosseini. His new book is called And the Mountains Echoed. Joining us for a pick three here today, the first two songs of which come from this Afghani singer, Ahmed Zahir. In Egypt, they had Umm Kulthum. When she died, they shut the country down for 3 days for her funeral. In Jamaica, something similar happened when Bob Marley died. When Zahir died in Afghanistan, what was the reaction?
Oh, national mourning on a mass scale. I mean, people poured into the streets. It was covered by the television virtually around the clock. It was a national tragedy. You know,
Where were you? Where were you living?
I was in France, and I have never shed a tear for the passing of a celebrity, even if it was somebody that I really admired. But I will say to you that when I heard Ahmed Zahir died, I wept. I felt the end of an era. I felt a part of my childhood had died, and I was angry. I was deeply angry with whoever had done this. I was deeply angry with the country as a whole for. It doesn't make any sense, but I was just so sick of the violence, and I was just, it was such a waste. And I went to Kabul again in 2003 for the first time in 27 years. And one of the things I promised myself I would do is go and visit Ahmed Zahir's grave. And I'll tell you, I went there, it was a travesty. It was, here's a legend buried, and there's sort of a monument where he's buried. But it's been destroyed. The Taliban shot bullets into it because they deplored music, particularly popular music. And so the stories had it that they had come to his gravesite and just shot at his grave in the Kite Runner essay, you know, as if dying once wasn't enough. You know, he had to die again. So I think I may have shed a tear for a second time for Ahmed Zahir there. I'm glad to hear, though, that that they've rebuilt the monument and that it's now a place where people come and pay proper respects.
So he's still this enormous figure in Afghani culture. What is this second song that we're going to hear? I'll defer to you for the pronunciation.
It's called Zindagi Chist, which means what is life? And it's a song about how difficult life is, and it's full of sorrow and hardships. And that's the way life is. We might as well enjoy it. We might as well make the best of it. And I picked this song because it's actually recorded live. And he was at his most electric when he would sing in people's homes or at private parties. And so this is a live recording.
Chosen for us by author Khaled Hosseini. This is music from Ahmed Zahir.
Zindagi chis,
Khalid Hosseini, that's a much more traditional sound than the other Ahmad Zahir tune you played for us.
Right, and he was an accomplished accordion player and a harmonium player. And when he was at his most electric, really, when he played live. And in Afghanistan, it was very common to have even the most famous singers, they would just go to a party and would be invited and they would sing and people would come and listen to them speak, listen to them sing. And so when he sang at parties in people's homes, then it was kind of just more down to basics. It was a harmonium, maybe an accordion and a tabla player, and then people would clap along and he would sing until 4 or 5 in the morning.
It occurs to me, I said a few moments ago that your latest novel, And the Mountains Echoed, doesn't have a lot of music in it. But in fact, the whole novel is sort of constructed like a piece of music. It begins with this fable, which kind of gives us a theme.
Like an intro.
Yeah. And then that theme is then varied and developed and, you know, I mean, all the things you get in the classical sonata allegro form, you know, the theme, the development, the recapitulation, all these things coming together. I mean, was it a tale that grew in the telling or did you have that structure in mind?
It sort of grew out of this small seed and it just kept snowballing and it just kept snowballing and it kept reaching outward and kept spreading outward, kind of like a... You drop a little drop of ink on something and it just kind of spreads outwards. And that's sort of the way it started. I mean, I thought it was going to be sort of this linear novel when I began the book. And then I became so interested in all these other characters and voices that I saw that the only way to tell this story was kind of shape it like a tree. You know, there's this trunk, which is this emotional story between a brother who loses his sister and never really fully recovers from it. And then the all these branches that sprout out from that main story.
Mm-hmm. There's also a remarkable sentence at the end of one of the chapters where there are literal echoes. There's the always, always, and the mountain that falls and falls. I mean, literal repetition of words.
Right.
How were you consciously, you know, kind of playing with the title, that fragment of the William Blake poem?
Yes, and there's also, you know, we're on a music show and there's a kind of a musicality to writing sentences. I mean, fiction, you begin to know your own voice in your head. And as you write and over the years, you develop a cadence, a certain rhythm, a certain tempo and a sort of your own musical voice inside your head. So those sentences just kind of pour out of you. And it's like the mountains don't just fall away. They fall and fall away. And there's like a musicality to it that I just love, and you know, that's sort of how the way it happens.
The book is And the Mountains Echoed. It is Khalid Hosseini's first new novel in 6 years after A Thousand Splendid Suns, and before that, of course, The Kite Runner. And he's sharing some favorite music with us on Soundcheck today. All right, so we've heard two from Ahmad Zahir, who is so big that there are now Ahmed impersonators, the way there are Elvis impersonators here in the States, right?
Except they're very well accomplished and beloved for their own merits.
Some Elvis impersonators are pretty damn good.
They're not jumping out of airplanes.
But let's move on to another artist that you've been listening to lately, Ustad Mahwash.
Yeah, it's just somebody I've been listening to my whole life. And Ustad Mahwash's roots go back to the same era as Ahmad Zahir. Thankfully, she's still around.
Uh-huh.
She's one of the most well-respected female singers in Afghanistan, is the only female singer that has been given the title of Ustad, which means master. Wonderful singer, an iconic voice in Afghanistan. Cut her teeth singing a lot of ghazals or classic poems.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular song that I've picked is one of her most famous compositions and one of the most famous songs. And the lyrics of the song are a very famous poem by Rumi called, I think in English it's called Song of the Reed. But it's one of these Sufi-themed poems about the relationship between man and divinity.
Mm-hmm.
And she paid me the great honor of actually singing this song at my wedding in 1993. So this song has very, very special meaning to me.
What's it called, the title?
The title is called Bishnawaz Nai, which means listen to the reed, the Nai flute.
This is Ustad Mahwash, chosen for us by Khalid Hosseini.
Bishnawaz Nai.
That is some music, again, chosen for us by the author Khaled Hosseini, by Ustad Mahwash, Afghani singer Khaled. She's now based here in the States.
Yeah, she lives here in the States.
And if you listen carefully, you can hear the nai, nay, depending on how you pronounce it, the cane flute, which is associated with Sufi.
And then the basis of this poem is that the plight of the nai flute, which has been ripped from the reed bed, and is now singing this mournful, longing song, is akin to what's happened to mankind, who's been ripped from his essence, from his divinity, and is forever lost, and is forever mourning to return to his back home, back to where he belongs with God.
Now, in a funny way, you've almost just perfectly described the story of "And the Mountains Echoed," is Abdullah and Pari separated when he's 10 and she's 3, brother and sister,
right,
and each feeling the absence of the other, even though Pari, as she grows up, doesn't know why she's feeling this absence.
Yes, and that's beautifully said, actually. And the mountain is really a story about separation, and it's about having lost something vital, and you're being aware that there is an absence in your life, and you have this, and all of us have in our life lost something, and the sort of this infantile, almost infantile instinct, desire to be reunited, either in a real way or in a metaphorical way. And that really kind of ties into the song as well.
We've been speaking with the author Khaled Hosseini, who wrote the best-selling novels The Kite Runner and A Thousand Splendid Suns. His new book is called And the Mountains Echoed. He's been sharing a pick three with us on Soundcheck today. Khaled, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much.
I loved it. Thank you for giving me a chance to share this music with the audience.
This is Soundcheck.
چشم سیاه ساقه مادر نبیندات، چشم سیاه ساقه مادر نبیندات، مادر بیند نبیند بابای عاشق نبیندات، مادر بیند نبیند وای عاشق نبیندات.
There's a little more from the late Afghani musician Ahmad Zahir, a big favorite of our guest, the novelist Khaled Hosseini. Coming up next, many people first heard Angel Olsen's voice when she sang in the Cairo Gang, a band formed by Will Oldham, who also records as Bonnie Prince Billy. We'll hear Angel Olsen sing songs from her own solo record next. And later, our friends at Q2 Music are gearing up for an all-day marathon of Stravinsky's Rite of Spring, and we'll get some excerpts. This is Soundcheck.
Every time I close my eyes, something small within me dies. Can't say if it's dark or bright, but it's all I've ever known.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Angel Olsen is a singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, and filmmaker. Earlier this year, she and 3 collaborators transformed 2 of her songs, including this one, Sweet Dreams, into a transatlantic film project. You can watch the resulting music videos on our site at soundcheck.org. But before you do that, Angel Olsen and the cellist Dana Olivetree are here with me in the Soundcheck studio to play a few songs for us. Here they are with Always Half Strange, live on Soundcheck.
All the places I've known and the faces I've seen over time are unseen and unknown. When you live in the dark and you start to believe everyone is asleep in the same way that you are, half life and half dream and half crazy to believe.
That is Angel Olsen singing and playing the guitar, Dana Olivetree playing the cello live on Soundcheck, and a song called Always Half Strange, which comes from Angel's latest full-length disc called Halfway Home. Lots of halves on that last record. I mean, imagery of half-life, half-insane, halfway home. What is it about being halfway that attracts you?
Well, I've been traveling a lot. That might be it.
Mm-hmm. So you're living this kind of half-life between home and not home, I guess.
The home that I'm creating as I'm traveling.
So was that a theme for this record?
It wasn't like a planned theme, but it was something I noticed after we put all the songs together. And then Always Half Strange actually has the title in the song, so I thought we might as well sing that one.
Halfway Home is the name of the record from Angel Olsen. If you were a guy, I would be saying, man, you sound like Roy Orbison there. and you seem to get a lot of, you know, people say, wow, you sound like Joni Mitchell, or you sound like Elvis Presley. Do you find people, you know, sort of hearing different things in your singing?
Yeah, I think people hear all kinds of things, you know, and I've heard the Roy Orbison thing for sure. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I don't really know what to do with it, I guess. It's kind of cool. I'm into it. I like Roy Orbison. But I haven't, like, I'm not obsessed with him or anything.
So, you know, how long did it take you to kind of find your own voice and to figure out what that was going to be?
Well, a while. I've been singing since I was a little girl, but I haven't really been totally confident enough to sing. When I turned about 16 or 17, that was when I started performing for people.
Well, some folks will have heard you singing with Will Oldham, known as Bonnie Prince Billy. Did working with him, did that change your approach to singing at all?
Yeah, I think so. I just, because I was suddenly learning how to harmonize with others and how to read others on stage in this really kind of intense way. Not in a bad way, but in an intense way, I had to listen and really, like, we did three-part harmonies, so it was really freestyle, like, and I wasn't used to that at all, so I think my voice and also listening, my listening has improved, I feel, but well, maybe I'm wrong about that.
I think, listening is an active, it's an act. It's not something passive. So I think you're absolutely right. It's like anything else, you can get better at it.
Yeah.
And when you say you were freestyling, that means you didn't have stuff written down that says when Will goes to A, I go to C sharp.
Yeah. It was just kind of like, oh, you're going to that note now. Cool. I'll switch really quick with my voice. But and I think singing other people's songs helps to stretch the voice.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Definitely.
The album is called Halfway Home. It's the latest from Angel Olsen, who's obviously here with us on Soundcheck today. And let's move on to something from the most recent album, from Halfway Home. This is Angel. She'll do this one solo. It's called Lonely Universe.
The way you touched my hand.
wasn't you anymore. I called for my brothers, I called for my sisters. But there was nothing left they could do. Would take the risk. it might be worth your time. It's only your life. It's only going by.
Angel Olsen, live on Soundcheck with a solo performance of her song Lonely Universe, which appears on her latest record called Halfway Home. You sounded a couple of times during that song like you were halfway into a quote of Goodbye Ruby Tuesday by Rolling Stones.
No.
But didn't go there.
Maybe next time. I would love to go there.
Angel Olsen's most recent full length is called Halfway Home. There's also an EP out earlier this year called Sleepwalker. And Angel, it's really been great having you with us. Thank you so much for playing for us today.
Thanks for having us.
This is Soundcheck.
You have a right to remain silent. Anything you say or do will be held against you in a court of law. So don't be such a fool. Now don't be such a fool.
If you liked our session with Angel Olsen, you can hear another song from it, stream, or even download it on our website, soundcheck.org. And by the way, you can find out as soon as we post new sessions from great artists, just follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Coming up, composer Phil Klein has been spending a lot of time with Igor Stravinsky's infamous work, The Rite of Spring, for an upcoming radio marathon on our sister station, q2music.org. He'll give us a preview of some of his favorite interpretations of the work next on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and on May 29th, we are celebrating the 100th anniversary of Stravinsky's masterpiece, The Rite of Spring. And perhaps you've heard we're featuring a solo piano version by Vicky Chow downstairs in the green space. But on our sister station, Q2, composer Phil Klein is hosting Rite of Spring Fever, a 24-hour marathon celebrating all these different interpretations of Stravinsky's work. It's all day and all night on May 29th, and there's more details online at q2music.org and right here in the studio where Phil Klein joins me. Hey, Phil.
Hey, John. How you doing?
Good. So lots of different versions. I mean, it was an established classic pretty early on, but there are a couple of recordings, a couple of conductors who seem to have a real knack for this piece. And who would you say is a good example of a classic Stravinsky conductor?
Well, there's Igor himself. He wasn't really considered to be a great conductor.
No, he wasn't.
He made a very good version with the New York Philharmonic in 1940, which you can find. It's actually, if you search for it, it's out there. But then he made a classic version for CBS Columbia Records in 1960, also with the Philharmonic, but for contractual reasons, they were called the Columbia Symphony Orchestra. And I think it was a combination of he had either played, practiced that piece so many times that he really could do it. I think a lot of it had to do with the musicians knew who was up there on the podium. They played their butts off for him because it's an incredibly exciting performance.
the famous opening of Stravinsky's Rite of Spring from 1913, and this is a much older Igor Stravinsky actually conducting the work with considerably more success than his first attempt some 20 years earlier in 1940. This recording from 1960, as Phil Klein has told us, that's the New York Philharmonic performing under the name of...
The Columbia Symphony Orchestra.
Yeah. Phil, your Rite of Spring Fever, this 24-hour marathon, will go through many iterations of Stravinsky's Rite of Spring. I have three favorite recordings, and they are all conducted by Pierre Boulez.
Well, there you go.
who is pretty high up on your list as well.
Well, he was certainly the hero of my youth because I was raised in the Cleveland area, and just when I was a young teenager, he was appointed the principal guest conductor. And he made that sensational recording with the Cleveland Orchestra, which to me it seemed like a particular arrival point for the piece. It was the first time I think most people said, it's perfect. They didn't even seem to struggle. It's like it was right at that moment. And as a matter of fact, in the years since, I think there's been a phenomenon where you hear a lot of first-rate orchestras play it and you say, it sounds like they're just sort of, you know, they're not even thinking about it anymore. It's not scary anymore.
Right.
And the Boulez was just right at that perfect moment in time. And, yeah, it's one of the immortal recordings.
So you like the first of the two Cleveland Orchestra recordings.
I prefer it. The second one's good, too. It's a little more relaxed. It's a little different.
Right. And I kind of like the ORTF recording.
He made that old one, yeah.
The old one.
A lot of us, that was one of the first ones we could afford because it was on Nonesuch.
Yeah. That was the first one for me. This first of the two recordings that Pierre Boulez did with Cleveland. And, you know, I asked him once, why are you able to see the forest and the trees with this piece? And he said, because I learned it playing a piano four hands version with no less a person than Olivier Messiaen, the great French composer. All right, so the two-piano version has a long and distinguished history. We'll be celebrating the 100th anniversary of the Rite of Spring with a solo piano version by Vicky Chow. That's in the green space on May 29th, the actual centennial at 7 p.m. You can get details at thegreenspace.org. Here's the Boulez recording, the first of his two recordings with the Cleveland Orchestra. Conductor Pierre Boulez and the Cleveland Orchestra in just a little bit. The Dance of the Adolescents from Stravinsky's Rite of Spring. We are celebrating its 100th anniversary, May 29th. The piece debuted. Famous riot ensued. We all know that story by now. May 29th, 1913. Phil Klein, composer, will be hosting Q2 Music's Rite of Spring Fever all day that day, 24-hour marathon. You better sleep up before. that's at q2music.org. And at 7 o'clock that evening, we'll be in the green space, our ground floor performance venue, with pianist Vicky Chow doing a solo piano version. The Rite of Spring goes solo. And you can get tickets at thegreenspace.org. Phil Klein's with me on soundcheck. The work was intended, and the ballet that it accompanied, both were intended to evoke a kind of ancient pre-Christian Russia. And despite that, there haven't been so many great Russian recordings of the Rite of Spring. Now, Leon Botstein, the conductor, told us that actually the work was, and Stravinsky in general, better received in the West than back home in Russia.
Well, of course, he was a Parisian, really, at the time that it premiered, and he never went back to Russia after the war. There was
after
not
the First World War?
After the First World War, yeah. And, yeah, he wrote most of The Rite of Spring in Switzerland. He actually, mm-hmm. I think he finished it in Paris. I was shocked when I realized, I never knew that there was a big break in between finishing the first half and finishing the rest of it. In like a couple of months, which to me seems, how could you have written that? And he wrote it in like, you know, fever pitch.
Right, right.
And then just, oh, I'll finish it later. It's like, man, stay on it. You've got it. Go, go. Yeah. But, yeah, there never was a Russian performing tradition. At the same time, there were a few Russians who made it a specialty, and one of them is very high on my top 10 list, a man who's not that well remembered now, Igor Markevich.
Oh, yeah.
Who made a recording. I mean, he was a very successful conductor.
And Mid-century.
And he made a recording with the Philharmonia Orchestra of London for EMI in, it was right around the same time as the Bernstein. I think it was 59. Mm-hmm. And that is one of the truly great recordings. And now, actually, we've got Valery Gergiev, who is really kicking up some dust with the piece.
Mm-hmm. So, with which orchestra?
Kirov.
So this is his home team,
his
basically.
Own band, yeah. And they really, I think, since, like I said, there's not really a Russian performing tradition of it, it's a very intuitive performance. It's very earthy. It's very wild. I know some people hate it, but I think it's because it just stands outside of what they're used to. You know, there is a tradition of performing it, and actually, oddly enough, American orchestras have made it, you know, very much their own.
Yeah.
You know, like the Boston Symphony has a tradition, and the New York Philharmonic and the Cleveland Orchestra all have Rite of Spring traditions. But, yeah, his version with the Kirov is really great.
This is Valery Gergiev, the Russian conductor, and the Kirov Orchestra with the Dance of the Earth from Stravinsky's Rite of Spring. That's a little bit of Stravinsky's Rite of Spring in a recent recording by Valery Gergiev, the much-traveled Russian conductor, but this time performing with his house band, the Kirov Orchestra, there at the Mariinsky Theater in St. Petersburg. And we're speaking with Phil Klein, the composer who is hosting Q2 Music's day-long Rite of Spring Fever Marathon on the actual 100th anniversary, May 29th, the same day that we're doing the Rite of Spring Goes Solo with pianist Vicky Chow to mark the, this really was a momentous occasion, a turning point in Western classical music.
It's very interesting that we often celebrate the birthdays of composers. I cannot think of any other example where we celebrate the birthday of a piece.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, this piece was almost beyond, I think Stravinsky acknowledged the piece was almost beyond him.
Well, what did he say? He said that he felt like it was just a vessel, that it just came to him and
passed through him.
Yeah, and out his fingers and onto the piano. I mean, he did write it at the piano, so hearing a solo piano version, not the most inappropriate thing in the world.
Not at all.
You've been listening, obviously, Phil, to many, many recordings of The Rite of Spring. When May 29th is over, will you ever listen to it again?
Of course I will. Actually, I like it better now than I did a few weeks ago.
All right. Stravinsky's Rite of Spring, celebrating its 100th anniversary on May 29th. Phil Klein will be hosting Q2 Music's Rite of Spring Fever all that day and all that night. More info at q2music.org. Phil, good to see you again.
You too, John.
A little bit more from Valery Gergiev and the Kirov Orchestra recording of The Rite of Spring. Remember, the actual anniversary is Wednesday, the 29th, and we are celebrating with a 7 p.m. live performance of the complete Rite of Spring on piano by Vicky Chow from the Bang on a Can All-Stars. That's In the Green Space, Wednesday, May 29th at 7 p.m. Get your tickets at thegreenspace.org. Tomorrow on the show, if you don't know illustrator William Stout by name, you might know his work, which has shaped the look of films like Pan's Labyrinth and Conan the Barbarian. His dinosaur art even influenced Michael Crichton's Jurassic Park. But William Stout is also a big music fan, and he'll tell us about his great new illustrated book called Legends of the Blues. And singer-songwriter Emily Wells created a whole series of symphonies with her looped violin playing a few years back. Now she's got another collection of unusual sounds, and she'll play live tomorrow. And don't forget to check out our website, soundcheck.org, where, among other things, you can hear our Check Ahead feature. Every week we give you a preview of an album that's not out yet. This week, the New Orleans trumpeter Kermit Ruffins gives us a look ahead at his new record called We Party in Traditional Style. It includes arrangements of Careless Love and When the Saints Go Marching In, and this version of Louis Armstrong's When It's Sleepy Time Down South.
Now the pale moon's shining on the fields below, and folks are crooning songs soft and low. You needn't tell me, boy, because I know you. When it's sleepy time down south.
Kermit Ruffins, the trumpeter and bandleader, his new record's called We Party in Traditional Style. It comes out next week, but you can stream the whole thing this week on Soundcheck's Check Ahead feature on our website. Soundcheck is a production of WNYC. Irene Trudell leads our engineering team with Paul Schneider, George Wellington, Bill O'Neill, and Jason Isaac. Our production team includes Greta Cohn, Katie Bishop, and Mike Katziff, with Alex Kappelman and our intern Caroline Scannell. Our executive producer is Joel Meyer. I'm John Schaefer. We'll be back tomorrow night at 9. Until then, see you online at soundcheck.org.